The person that we have as our guest today is a business leader in our community. Super great guy, Senator John Braun. How are you this morning?
Good morning.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling us back three times to get this right.
All I heard was you had to flip a coin, and then I got hung up on, so I figured I lost.
You lost. It's over. You're done.
Oh, man.
Hey, so super excited to have you on. We had a special guest call in on a Thursday. We had Senator Wilson last week, so that was fun.
Great.
You guys have a lot on your plate right now.
We do. We're in the middle of a partly virtual session, in the middle of a worldwide pandemic, with a majority in the Senate and in the House that are determined to pass a bunch of new taxes. So we're busy looking out for the interests of Washington State citizens or around this district and around the state. Busy.
You know, it's new taxes, and what. You know, why don't you? I mean, that just brings up a good point. Can you? There's expected great news today, right?
Right, with the forecast.
Yeah, tell us about what the revenue councils should be coming or is planning on coming out with today.
Oh, they came out. It was out just a bit. Just your timely question. Woo-hoo. Came out just after 8 o'clock this morning.
Got it.
Unbelievably good news. Again, considering the restrictions placed on our business community over the last year. Revenues are projected to grow by $3.2 billion over the next 2 years in the coming biennium, and a total of, actually 3.3, I think, and a total of $5.2 billion over the four-year outlook, which is the four-year, you know, the basis for balancing our budget. So that is nearly unprecedented, considering that our economy has figured out a way to do that in with the restrictions placed upon them over the last year is unbelievable to me.
So question,
Julie,
I mean, two things. One, I think the Democrats are going to say at this point, well, now we can afford the low carbon fuel standard. That's because that's the answer they're going to give you. But when you have a token economy, our economy is based on $1 for one good, right? And that's what our economy is based on. You buy something and you make something, and that's what it is. But we've created this false economy, which is now you don't have to create anything to get that dollar. And it's at like 44% of the people are receiving some kind of handout right now. And that handout is larger than it's ever been, $3-4 trillion now and another $3-4 trillion coming. And so it creates hyperinflation, right? And goods and services go up because you're not making as many, and yet you're putting more money out there. So isn't this all just bogus?
Yeah, I think that's a complicated question, but I think your instincts are right. I mean, not only are we seeing state revenue grow considerably, and that's just a portion of the story. The other portion is and it varies a little bit. We're still trying to figure out the language, but somewhere between, you know, $12 and $15 billion coming into our state from the stimulus. And this is on top of all the previous stimulus. So, yeah, I think we have a real risk. Two things we're at risk of. One, that we drive, you know, too much money into the economy and we create inflation. You're exactly right. The other issue is at some point, our kids or our grandkids are going to have to pay this money back. So I think we need to put the brakes on spending. Of course, the federal level, we need to put the brakes on just handing out more free money.
Yeah.
Welcome to Greece.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean,
exactly.
It is. We have this false. I mean, yes, our revenues are going to grow. I think that forecast is probably light. A lot of businesses that I know and have talked to are having record years. I mean, they're in spite of the edicts being handed down and all of the restrictions that are placed on them, they're still finding a way to make a profit. And it's odd because there's a lot of, I guess, federal money that's being shoved into the economy that creates this economy. It creates this false sense of, I guess, I don't know what, security, right?
A false economy.
Okay. But still, that's going to drop one day.
Oh, yeah.
At some point, that's going to drop, and inflation, we're going to have to deal with. I mean, back in the 50s, we had this problem.
It causes a recession.
And
that's the only way you can fix hyperinflation is
right.
To raise interest rates and cause recession. So, you know, Germany went through it. You cannot balance hyperinflation with anything else.
Right.
So what do you think, John? Are they going to use this as an excuse now to run the low-carbon fuel standard? Or, you know, my understanding is you have three very strong senators standing up against capital gains, and you have them standing against the low-carbon fuel standard on the other side of the aisle. Is that true?
So, absolutely, on capital gains, unfortunately, we needed four to stop it from going forward. Shoot. So I think capital gains, I mean, this is the crazy thing. In a world where we have, you know, tens of billions of additional dollars over a balanced budget, understand all this is on top of a fully balanced budget and a robust budget.
Okay.
Arguably, and I could go through the details, but arguably among the most robust budgets in the country, and we have all this new money, they still insist we need a new capital gains income tax. And the Senate, for the first time, they've been trying to do this for, at least the 9 years I've been there.
Right.
Richard, probably for the 20 years or more that you were there, and they finally got it through the Senate. And so I don't think the speaker is going to mess around. I think she's going to pass it out because she doesn't care whether we need the money or not. It's ideological.
Well, what's it going to go for, though?
I mean, and is there a referendum?
Yeah.
Is. That's the good news. Originally they proposed this bill, this income tax bill, with an emergency clause, so there couldn't be a referendum. We were able to strip the referendum, the emergency clause off, so there will be, as of today. Now, there's rumors that the House is going to try and put the emergency clause back on. I don't think there are the votes to do that, frankly. Assuming they don't, I'm certain there will be a referendum. I think the people will demand an opportunity to vote on this issue. And let's be clear. I mean, not only do you not need an income tax right now, it's just part of the culture in Washington. The people of Washington have refused it 10 times. This is just not the way we want to do, you know, in our state to run. So I am fairly confident that it'll be a referendum. I believe the people will speak and they'll say no, thank you. But there's going to be a lot of work to do between where we're at now and there.
John, when you guys are talking about these new taxes, these the new income that the Democrats want to raise, what is their method? Why do they need more revenue? What are they trying to pay for? I mean, I don't get it.
Well, they'll
it's a punishment.
Wave their hands and they'll say two things. We need more money for necessary services. Not accurate. Just not accurate. Even less accurate with this forecast. And then they'll say, "Hey, we have an unfair tax system. We have to fix it." Well, two things. One, that claim is based on a very flawed report. It is not clear. Any thoughtful analysis of that report will come to the conclusion that it's biased and just trying to argue for income tax. But the other thing is if you truly care about having a more progressive tax system, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, a lot right with it, just raising the tax on certain people won't fix that. If you really want to fix a regressive system, you got to lower the tax on the folks that they think are paying too much. And there's nowhere in there where they propose to lower the taxes on anybody. So this is just a false flag. They want to, you know, pretend that they're doing, you know, good work by raising taxes because they're helping people, but they're not. They're not lowering taxes. There's no effort to lower property taxes or lower gas taxes. It's just increasing taxes. And here's the last thing, not the last thing, but the last thing I say about that is they're raising taxes on people who are very mobile. You know, they'll go around and say, well, only if several thousand people are going to pay this tax. Guess what? Most of those people can leave the state of Washington quite easily, and they will. The ones that are paying, you know, now have a brand new tax. I mean, we've already had the tech industry say we're going to, you know, the prospect of new tech startups in the state of Washington, which is a good chunk of our additional revenue, is declining rapidly. If there's going to be a capital gains tax, that's how they pitch the state of Washington: no income tax, and that's because they want to make that go away. It's short-sighted.
So, you know, I appreciate that, all the whole thing, because when you talk about this and the impact it's had and Washington State's position on this in the past, the one positive thing is when they pass it, Inslee signs it, maybe Washington will wake up and vote some people out.
Well, that is not lost on me. I think that this is going to show the people of the state of Washington kind of what they've gotten for the folks they've elected, and I think that puts us in good shape to offer an alternative that listens a little more carefully to the wishes of the people of the state of Washington. So
we're even seeing a Lewis County impact fee debate down here, where some people want an impact fee in Lewis County.
Oh man, you know that's
People don't get that. I mean, going to the impact fee. I mean, we can talk on and on about our homelessness challenge in Washington and here in Lewis County, and yet time after time, we've seen this session in the state legislature, we want to add one more cost to a new home or to a multifamily housing. People, it's like we struggle with math. Every time you add an additional cost, it makes it that much further out of reach for people having trouble affording housing. And there doesn't seem to be any willingness to slow down and say, wait, why don't we try to make this easier and less expensive to build housing? Maybe that would help us with our problem.
Absolutely.
So do you think they're going to do both, the low carbon fuel standard and the capital gains?
Yeah. I get back to your earlier question. One, I don't think the new revenue will affect their desire to do the low carbon fuel standard. That's just ideological, and that's about, you know, saving the planet, despite lots of research that says it does almost nothing.
Well, and it shows carbon in their math they're not going to do anything with the money to lower carbon.
That's right. That's right. But it's ideological. So there are three things that realistically are on the table, I think, right now. And there could be more, but I think the capital gains income tax is a real thing. And I'm very concerned that the House just passes it out straight to the governor and he signs it. Low carbon fuel standard. I think really the only thing standing between that and getting it to the governor is the Transportation Committee and the Senate. Does Senator Steve Hobbs hold it there? I don't know if he will or not, but that's the only way you stop it now, I think. And that's, you know, you've seen the math. It's 50 cents or more per gallon and nothing. We get nothing out of it. Not lower carbon, not better roads, nothing. Just more money.
It's all a shell game.
And then the cap and tax. They call it cap and invest. We call it cap and tax because that's all it does is caps carbon. And then taxes folks that don't meet the cap. And the crazy thing is, this one doesn't do anything to reduce carbon either. It just punishes people without any true path to a lower carbon future. So all three of those look to have a potential path all the way to the governor and signature. So and this is all in a world where we're trying to, you know, in spite of our great performance economically, I would say our business community is still in a fragile state. I mean, we've been very fortunate. People have done a great job reacting to the challenges in front of them, but it doesn't take much. You mentioned it could be inflation, it could be another downturn, it could be anything that could just puts business after business over the edge. And on top of that, we want to put three enormous new burdens on top of them. It's
fragile.
Very,
our economy is a fragile economy right now, and it seems like they're doing everything they can to push it, to tip it over the edge so they can claim that there's some kind of, you know, the sky is falling. They want that sky is falling scenario so that they can get their agenda passed and or prove that their ideology is the right way. And it just drives me crazy. I mean, I just don't understand why they continue to push these kind of regressive taxes on us. I mean, if sometimes I think as conservatives, we have this false sense of hope that, oh, you know what? If they pass this next tax, people are going to wake up. But you know what? It never happens because they continue to pass these crazy ideas and we continue to think and have hope that the people of Washington State are going to wake up and vote these people out of office that continue these crazy things. And it, you know, I don't know. We have to wake up in another way. And I don't know how that is.
Well, I think, nothing against, downtown Seattle, the central Puget Sound. I don't have any expectation they're going to change their ways and start voting in more thoughtful and conservative folks. But I do think that we have an opportunity in the suburbs to show a better path. So I think that's our challenge, is we have to get out there and we have to demonstrate that there is a better path to a great Washington State that doesn't involve new tax after new tax. It does deliver on our promises and willing to be held accountable, which, you know, the current administration is not, and it's being held accountable in any fashion. So I think that's our challenge, and I know we haven't we've had our struggles in the state with with pushing a more thoughtful and conservative agenda. But I think we have a chance with this to get back out there and show that there's a better way that's better for their families, better for their children.
Well, you are doing
better
a good
for their
job.
Future.
Well,
yeah,
for
we
sure.
appreciate you a whole bunch for taking on the leadership role in the Senate. When we come back from the break, you'll stay with us, John. Hopefully, yes.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. When we come back from the break, one of the things I want you to ponder and think about during the break is, because of virtual session, did it make these two bills easier to pass? And we're going to go to break to hear from our sponsors.
Absolutely.
And we will be right back.
As a real estate broker who's lived in Lewis County for most of my life, I value this community and the people that choose to live here. Hi, this is Heather Stewart with Blade Realty. With over 35 years of sales and marketing experience, it's an honor to put my strong negotiating skills, work ethic, and awesome customer service to work for you. Let's make your real estate journey as stress-free as possible so you can have peace of mind and enjoy the ride. Visit me on Facebook at Heather Stewart Realtor or at heatherstewartrealtor.com. Stellar service always guaranteed.
What's happening?
Let's get to work.
Yeah!
On the web, on your phone, and on the air.
K-E-L-A.
Let's talk about it.
Okay, that was weird.
It's time to get out there and
talk about Home Carpet Warehouse a moment.
You know what? It is. It is Home Carpet Warehouse in Chehalis, right across the street from McDonald's. They have continuously been giving back to this community in more ways than we can even talk about. But one of them is the amazing sales that they're having this month. You know, it's St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. In fact, one of our fans,
yes,
we won't say who, but... Thank you, Penny. One of our fans brought us cupcakes this morning, so it set a precedent.
It did.
That if you want to bring us gifts on Wednesday and Thursday morning at 8:30, we'll take them because, you know, in our contract with these big salaries we get to do this show, these exorbitant salaries,
they are,
we can
they're
take
amazing.
Some spiffs.
The bonuses are crazy.
Kind of like John Braun with his salary, his exorbitant, ridiculous salary that he gets in the Senate. You know, it's just something. How you doing, John?
I'm doing great.
He's like, this is nuts. But really, Home Carpet Warehouse in Chehalis, they're having a big sale this week. It's the St. Patrick's Day sale. And you honestly will be shocked the kind of savings that you're going to get. And you know what? If you're doing a home improvement project, right now is the time to go talk to John, Rich, Randy about all of the amazing things that they can help you with.
Free design. And cabinets, too.
And cabinets, too. So with that, we're back with John Braun, the leader.
The leader
of our Senate,
Lewis County Senator and leader.
We don't talk about that enough. But in Lewis County, we have been lucky to have people like you, Richard, like Peter O'Bonnell, and thank God for. I say this, thank God for John Braun.
Yes,
right?
Yes,
John, you're doing awesome up there.
We appreciate it.
And what a battle!
So, what do you think? I mean, do you think the virtual session, the lack of floor debate, the lack of being able to look face-to-face at each other as you stick the tax in somebody's neck, do you think that is causing some of these issues this year?
I do. I don't want to come out completely. I mean, there's some value in the virtual session in terms of people being able to get in from long distances and participate, but there's offsets to that that really make it a negative overall. And I would say there's two big issues that contribute to not just these bills we've been talking about, but there's a ton of just bad bills that are out there on both sides of the rotunda this year. And some of them are bad bills, but they're not really going to do much, and I guess you can't fight everything. Some of them are going to have decades of impact, negative impact on the state, I believe. And I think two things. One, even though certainly you can log into your computer and see what's going on, it's not as real to many people as it is if you can go to Olympia and participate in the process. There's a human aspect to it. I'm sure you recognize, Richard, that you can't get from Zoom or from Teams. And then the other thing is you have almost no ability to have conversations with other legislators, you know, as stuff works its way through, and you have the opportunity to understand what they're trying to get at and share the negative impacts of some of the things they're trying to do. And And so, I mean, I don't agree with the people on the other side of the aisle on many issues, but they're still real humans. And if you go talk to them, my experience is they'll listen, or at least they'll, you know, try to understand. They may change their mind, they may not, but you have an ability to affect the outcome of a bill in ways you just don't right now. And people can just, the ability to hold votes together for a bad bill is increased because there's less interaction with people that have opposing views and less interaction with the public. So I think on net, it's a real negative to the state of Washington. And I think we're about to get a truckload of bad bills signed out by the governor as a result.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking to myself. John, I don't even know what I said now. Richard forgot to turn my mic up, and that was embarrassing.
Sorry, Richard. Folks. We were had a technical glitch there.
Good Lord. Okay, I'm going to be in charge of this board next time.
No.
Okay. That's what I was saying is that this virtual session has had arrows thrown at it from all over the place, and Inslee has held the virtual session together, I believe, for his own benefit and for their side's benefit. And, you know, it's sad. It is sad. But, I mean, hey, despite that, you guys have done a wonderful job at pushing as hard as you can to protect the state, to protect the rural Americans, the rural people here in Lewis County. And that's amazing. So, John, you are back, right?
I am back.
Yes, thank you.
That wasn't me. I didn't do that.
That was Comcast, everybody, not Richard.
Yeah, Richard did not make that mistake.
That was Comcast.
So, you know, we have a little bit of time left on this, but so what do you think of all that? And what do you think that... Do you think you guys... I mean, you could get back in the Senate and do live floor debate. You have the space. Because now, you know, it's 3 feet. Now that we've changed all the rules and the world is now different, the virus now only travels 3 feet instead of six.
And what about what you asked Wilson to do?
It's a new variant. It's only travels 3 feet.
So we talked to Senator Wilson about this great idea we had, and we were wondering what you thought of it. Maybe going back to the floor.
I think it's a great idea. In fact, I had this conversation with the majority leader yesterday about this exact thing. I mean, they're pushing back. You know, I don't know how much. I don't know when I got cut off. I rambled on about, you know, the downsides of a remote session. And it is really bad. And there are a lot of reasons for us to be back in. We know we can be back in safe. I mean, we've been saying this from the beginning. We're not trying to do things without reasonable safeguards. But, you know, if you can go look at the number of people in Walmart or Home Depot and the space that you have there, we have the similar space in the Senate chamber. We could be spread out. We could be...
Oh, easily. You guys even have room for napping.
Yes. I don't know about napping, but certainly we have space to be safe. And it's just a better way to do business. And so we're going to push on it. I mean, they understand what the situation they got. They don't want to, you know, they're scared to death of doing anything wrong with the virus. And two, they understand that they have a clear path. They can hold together. They can, you know, keep their votes on bad bills and get them out because, you know, they're partisan supporters want them out. And I'm not optimistic we can get that changed. I mean, it's a case of we talked earlier about elections. Elections matter, and right now the elections have put the D's in the majority in the Senate, and therefore they have the votes to make the rules. And we were pushing back as hard and as effectively as we can, but to really change it, we've got to change the balance in the Senate and the House, for that matter.
Well, there's no incentive for them to change. I mean, there's no reason, there's no carrot, there's nothing they gain by allowing people back inside, right? This is 100% in favor and it benefits them, so why would they change?
Yeah, transparency is not good for them at this point. They have a bunch of bills that are going to hurt real, regular people around the state of Washington, and being transparent about it is not helpful. You're right. There's nothing driving that. There's only risk from their perspective. But we got to be more vocal and more clear about the restrictions, and that's a little hard because the average Washingtonian, I think, is busy taking care of their families, you know, going to work, you know, and don't have time to see the, frankly, the miscarriage of justice happening in this legislative session.